Something Republicans and Democrats generally agree upon has actually become law in Washington. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. President Obama has signed into law new protections for trade secrets. The bill had bipartisan support, zero senators, only two congressmen voted no. Marketplace's Jed Kim has been looking into this issue for us. Jed, what is this law? What's it do?
The Defend Trade Secrets Act adds pretty significant protections for intellectual property. It allows people and companies to sue over stolen trade secrets, things like my dad's famous barbecue chicken recipe or real ones like Google's algorithms. Up till now, those kinds of federal protections were limited to copyrights, trademarks, and patents. But sometimes you don't want anything known about your intellectual property. That's when you stick it in a vault, and that's what this is designed to protect. Trade secrets have always been handled by states. Now there will be access to federal courts when secrets cross state lines or international borders.
But it's already illegal, criminal, to steal trade secrets. Why is this law necessary?
There's a lot at risk. Some estimates put our losses at $300 billion a year because of trade secret theft. We've heard a lot about cases of theft activity in the Asia-Pacific region recently. And you're right that trade secrets are protected. This adds a big gun. Civil litigation.
Civil litigation. Marketplace's Jed Kim, thank you. Just now, after an overnight session, Brazil's Senate voted to temporarily remove President Dilma Rousseff and launch an impeachment trial. Ms. Rousseff faces allegations of corruption there, and a trial could last as long as 180 days. If two-thirds of Brazil's Senate ultimately finds the president guilty, she'll be removed permanently. Vice President Michel Temer becomes the interim leader. Let's do the numbers. The 100-share index in London is up 0.3%. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up 0.5%. Dow future is up 0.4%, 40 points. A new report today from the MIT Sloan Management Review says investors care more about sustainability than many companies might think. The reason, they believe, a firm's environmental record affects its future success. This comes as a group of academics press Exxon and Chevron to open up about their efforts to combat climate change, Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
It's been a big year for shareholder votes on the environment. Lily Thompson is an undergrad at Cambridge University. She's also a member of Positive Investment. That's the academic-backed campaign that's pushing Exxon and Chevron to do things like set goals for cutting greenhouse gases.
It's trying to steer the big guys around to do something about the biggest problem of our generation.
Oil companies may resent zealous shareholders, but Amy Myers Jaffe, who directs the Energy and Sustainability Program at UC Davis, says these firms will get greener. This is partly because they'll have to. She says companies won't be able to generate past oil profits in the future.
We have ride sharing, we have, you know, new efficient vehicles. Companies need to step back and say, will my strategy be resilient in a world where oil demand peaks in the 2020s or 2030s or even in the 2040s.
She says much of what these resolutions demand has already become best practice at other companies. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Hi, I'm David Brancaccio. Thank you for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. A lot happens while you sleep, so each morning we bring you the latest numbers on markets, money, jobs, and innovation, plus the context I think we all need to make the smartest decisions. We'd like you to help us keep our numbers strong by making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace. And this month, your gift in any amount will be automatically doubled thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. Donate today at marketplace.org. Now to a new meaning for the phrase state of the art. The San Francisco Museum of Modern Art opens its new building this weekend. It'll contain works of art, presumably, but much is being made of the museum's free public space and fancy technology. Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood got a preview tour. Good morning, Molly.
Hi, David.
It's interesting. I'm talking to the tech correspondent about a museum. What is notable about this renovation?
I know, exactly. That is the notable part, right? The question for the MoMA is how do you do art in such a digital city, which is really, I mean, it's at the heart of San Francisco. It's right downtown. It's a major contemporary art museum in America. And it has been closed for 3 years while they did this $300 million expansion. It tripled the size of the museum. And how do you make this renovation pay off, not to mention sort of all of the innovations in actual building?
All right, but San Francisco, I used to live there. I know people from all walks of life over there. You got a lot of tourists, but you also have a lot of digerati, and you worry that those folks will have the impulse to stay at home, browse the collection of the San Francisco MoMA on a 4.7-inch screen.
Oh, absolutely. And so one of the things that the MoMA is trying to do with this renovation is make the museum sort of a cool, hip, fun place to go. They've got a coffee shop inside that's serving San Francisco's hippest local roast. There's a digital selfie station. And it also has a ton of unticketed space. They really want people to just wander in, bring their laptops, and work.
All right. Well, tell me about, though, I've heard about a fancy application of Wi-Fi, of wireless, in the venue.
They've tried to reinvent the audio tour and partnered with a startup, this San Francisco company called Detour. It's a very cool technology. It can sync the tour between two people, so you're both hearing the same thing at the same time instead of that thing where somebody's ahead of you. So they're going to actually sort of track the position of your phone using the Wi-Fi signals coming out of it and do this really cool tour that as you move, the tour picks up and stops when you stop. It gives you sort of basic turn-by-turn directions. And then they have all these really interesting storytellers. They said they've got everything from Druid priests to San Francisco Giants. But what I was really into is how hard it was to do this technology indoors. They had to do a complete Wi-Fi survey of the building. They got Apple to come in and do it. And there's, you know, as you would expect in any modern building, miles of fiber.
It all sounds very cool, although I want to see this digital selfie station. We'll see. Marketplace's senior tech correspondent, Molly Wood, thank you.
My pleasure, David.
And an impoverished city in Uzbekistan is paying its teachers in chickens. Now, it is true the presumed origins of the word capitalism is that capita means head, as in head of cattle, a form of stored wealth, if you think about it. But the Uzbek teachers seem to be getting an especially raw deal. They're not getting grown chickens. They're getting little chicks at half their market value by one analysis. One headline writer called this a poultry salary. But those of us who think teachers do crucial work may not find this a laughing matter. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.